This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of November 9th. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Sunday morning is Jim Allen. You up there, buddy?
What? Oh, man. Don't do my alarm clock every weekend.
All right. Do me a favor, because I know you always have a cup of Joe. Just dump it on your head.
give you vicarious pleasure from my looking silly. No way, baby. I mean, you get that anyway, just from stuff I write on my blog, apparently.
Apparently, yes. Apparently, I do. But I keep it to myself, and until a month later when I tell you.
I was going to say, it sounds like a New Year's resolution next year.
Well, you know, after the fact, coming up to a guy and saying something is not as bad as immediately hitting him up on Twitter in front of everybody else. So I didn't expose everything to the world. So how's that? You got that going for you.
You don't know how happy it is. It makes me to hear that you don't expose everything to the world on Twitter.
I mean, I'm just, tiny victories, buddy. Tiny victories, buddy.
Well, you said it, I didn't.
All right. Hey, look, we got elections, we got coronavirus things. There are a lot of stressors out here these days. Just try to mask up and stay healthy and keep the people around you healthy. And thanks to all the healthcare workers worldwide. We know you guys are doing a lot of work. The numbers are spiking.
Take care of number one. I know you guys are out taking care of us, but a friend of mine who is a emergency services worker in the States and a heck of a baseball writer, Bill, he finally got COVID-19. He apparently is okay and symptoms free, but you guys take care of number one, because like on the airplane, when the oxygen masks drop, we depend on you to be, you know, to keep your head.
Right. Attach your mask first and then help the people around you.
Exactly.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Zach Neal of the Cebu Lions. We're going to discuss the PL race for the playoffs, the top rookies, Hayato Sakamoto's chase for 2,000 hits, and a whole lot more, along with some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
So on Thursday, we were able to sit down and have a telephone chat with, let's call him friend of the program now, Zach Neal of Cebu. I mean, he has been on a bunch of times. He's tried to help us get other guys on. So he's working hard for us as well as for the Cebu Lions. He's in his second year in NPB and had that club record 13-game winning streak that was dating back to last season and into this season. And he's 6-8 this year with an ERA probably much higher than he would like to have it, and probably a lot of people would like to have it, but at 5.22, and a lot of his other metrics are probably a little bit higher than he expects. But I mean, this is just a weird year. It's a weird season. It's hard to get your bearings. It's hard to just keep the kind of consistency I think a lot of people expect. So he's only in his second year, and as you'll hear him talk about in the chat, it's very difficult that second year when a lot of teams know what to expect from you as well. So his birthday, if you're listening on the day that we post the show, is today. So Monday in Japan. Mm. And he's 32, or he is 32 now. And his birthday is the day before the Wonder Twins' birthday. So they're going to be turning four. So we're taking them to Disneyland. And that's why we are taping on Sunday morning, because taking the family out to stay in Chiba, rainy, cold, freezing Chiba, it looked like last night, and we will stay out there and come back, and so that's why we're doing the show a day early, and I apologize, because we've got this big showdown game between the Lotte Marines and the Cebu Lions, the fight for second place. It's going to be really exciting, and I'll be on a train and holding a bunch of luggage and tugging and toting and doing all this stuff to get out to Chiba so that we can get in our hotel and cuddle up and watch TV tonight. So
I picture you with one of these like flags that the Japanese tour conductors used to do a lot of 20 years ago.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Carrying the flag with, John Gibson Travel. Come on, team. Come on.
Yeah, I probably in another couple of years, but this time I'll be carrying too much luggage myself because okay. The kids still aren't big enough to cover to carry theirs. As soon as they can carry their own luggage, I'll be carrying a flag. I promise. Because by that time I'll be too old to be carrying all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, it has been a long trek to get to this point in the season, and I do want to applaud all the teams and the staff members and the coaches and everybody involved with NPV to getting us here. We're on the cusp, on the verge here of finishing the regular season and getting into the playoffs, and hopefully we'll have a safe playoff run for everybody, and that's the most important thing. We are going to crown a winner, hopefully. So anyway, Zach had a lot to say about the whole season and about his adjustments in the second second season in NPV. So let's take a listen. All right, we are thrilled again to be joined by Zach Neal of the Cebu Lions. Thank you very much, buddy, for taking the time to chat with us this week.
Yeah, no worries. Always a pleasure.
No, the pleasure is all ours, and we really enjoy talking to you. Not only that, hopefully in the off season we can do another one of those long panel discussions and have you on again, too. So I'm setting it up here.
Yeah, I'm always down for that.
Okay. All right, let's get into it. I'm going to admit it. I'll be totally honest. I didn't really expect the Cebu Lions to be in second place at this point, maybe thinking back maybe a month, 6 weeks ago. How did you guys get here in this position?
Yeah, I'm not sure. A lot of people, I think a lot of people probably felt the same way that that you felt. I think it's been a mixture of a few things. We've started playing really well, you know, kind of playing up to our potential, I'd say. You know, I always said, I think I said this a couple months ago, we're a really strong second half team. In like the last 2-3 weeks, that's really shown. And, you know, we were chasing Chiba for the longest time, and they got hit with the corona bug. So that kind of played a detriment to their team. And then I think you really saw the tides change whenever Leonis Martin broke his ankle at our place. And I felt like their spirit kind of left, you know, in a sense, when he got hurt. He was a really big part of their team.
Mm-hmm.
And then for us, you know, we've just been winning a lot of games. You know, we've had to win in order to move up, and that's what we've done. Obviously, you know, when you get to this point in the season and you're so far behind, you have to have a little bit of good fortune from other teams as well.
Sure.
We're not out of the woods yet. We still got a lot of work to do, but I think we put ourselves in a good position currently to go into SoftBank and, you know, claim that second spot. So, you know, a lot of people probably didn't think that was possible, but, you know, here we are again.
Yeah, and you talked about it with me before, I think even on the show, and I've said, look, I don't count you guys out because – I don't count you out of innings. I don't count you out of games.
Yeah.
I made the mistake here thinking maybe I might count you out of the race. But even then, I didn't do it basically counting you out completely. I just thought it was a far-fetched idea. And certainly there's some comeback by Lotte that's involved in their injuries. But every team has endured injuries and COVID measures. So how have you guys kept the winning going throughout all this stuff?
You know, I felt it last year whenever I was here. The makeup of the team, there's something about the guys on this team that there is that no quit attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had bad stretches during the season and we've had good stretches, but there was never, I always felt a sense of calm. You know, just kind of knowing that things would turn around for us. And, you know, like you said, we've endured injuries as well. You know, I think some guys have been playing banged up. But there's just something about, you know, a team when they're a championship team. And, you know, we did win the league last year and the year before. So I think that's just kind of instilled in some of the players' DNA. You know, me, myself, personally, I've done a lot of winning throughout my career.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I'm used to, something that I expect of myself. And, you know, the players here, they expect that as well. Obviously, the last 2 years won a champion, the league championship. So I think that's just part of it's in the DNA, you know. It's just something about us. We don't really weather when things are bad or things are going good. It's just kind of try to keep it steady.
I know that. I've seen the veteran players be calm in some big situations late. I've seen some of the young players come through in some of the big situations late. So I'm a believer. I try not to count you guys out. I think it's easy to do when you look at the numbers, but if you actually watch the games, you are a walk and a home run away from doing some damage all the time. So that's the way I think about it. Now, I know that there's a fine line between winning and losing. So how do you feel about this season results-wise versus your season last year?
Yeah, like you said, there is a fine line, and there's a lot that goes into, a season like I had last year. I have had some struggles this year that I'm not used to, I will say. Mechanically, physically, I haven't felt the way that I expect myself to feel on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me personally, that was really frustrating at times for me. I had three or four just super uncharacteristic games for myself. Not getting out of the third inning, bunch of hits, just things that I'm not used to as a pitcher. Mm-hmm. And, so for me, I've kind of had to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, what makes me me? What makes me, who I am and, the success I've had here already? Taking a deep dive into my mechanics, looking at my, analytics. So I've started to do that, later into the year because, it was a very unusual year. So that's also plays a factor.
Sure.
I'm not used to, stopping after I'm, revved up and ramped up and ready to go, stopping for almost 2.5 months and then starting back up, as soon as we can. So I think I developed some pretty bad habits. And I think I was practicing those bad habits for most of the year. Unbeknownst to me, I felt like I was doing the right thing, but maybe I wasn't, mechanically. So I'm practicing the wrong things. And then now I'm instilling those wrong patterns into my, everyday throwing or bullpens. And then, so I can't ever say that I went on some good stretches this year. I'd go on 4 or 5 weeks in a row with quality starts, some wins, and then I'd have a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's kind of what I want to look at and improve on for next year. 2019, I think I had 14 consecutive starts that were quality, something like that, So that's the pitcher that I want to be, and that, that I've shown. So this year was a bit frustrating. I've always said I've never played winter ball, but, I'm playing it right now.
Sure.
My body doesn't really understand what's going on, I think. We've been doing this since February 1st, and even during the break, we were still practicing 3 days a week, so.
Gotta stay sharp.
Yeah, so it's been a weird year with that. So there's a lot of factors, I think. But, when you compare the seasons, that's kind of thing that stands out to me is, there's a few games in there where it's like, man, I really didn't throw like Zach Neale throws, and it's like, well, why is that? And so now, going into this, potential break before the playoffs and into the off season, just kind of analyzing myself and being real with it and seeing how I'm moving on the mound and in the weight room, and that's really the only thing there is to do. I've been playing this, next year will be my 11th season, so I've done this enough now to where I jot down how I feel during the season. Okay, I felt this way. Okay, why is that? Okay, well, let's adjust and let's make adjustments. And that's really all that you can do season to season.
Sure.
So that's kind of what I'm looking at, going into the off season and whenever that may be. So you make the adjustment and go forward, really,
I know.
I was telling the newspaper the other day, it felt like sometimes I got bucked off the horse this year pretty bad, you know. And, you know, my mantra and the way I live my life is if that happens, hey, I'm going to get back up. I'm going to keep going. And that's kind of how I look at it right now. And that's what I'll do.
You know, you talk about the making of adjustments, and I just wonder how you try to stay consistent when your opponents are constantly making adjustments against you, like, yeah, you know, pitch to pitch sometimes, at bat to at bat, and game to game, and you're facing the same opponents over and over. How do you make those adjustments?
Yeah, that's another thing too. You know, now going into my second year, I think everyone, you know, I mean, I would say everyone's second year in Japan is probably not as successful as their first, because these teams study you and kind of know what you're bringing to the table. And that was a challenge. You know, not to say that it's the sole reason for, you know, some of my struggles, but I would say that has a little bit to do with it. You know, cause they knew what I was going to do last year too, but my stuff was just a little bit better, and it didn't matter. So, but that is a thing too, you know, facing the same team. You know, I faced Rakuten maybe 6 times, you know, and I faced them maybe 3 times in 5 weeks, I think. So they really had a good look at me. And, you know, my start before last against them, it was like they knew what I was throwing. You know, it felt like they had a plan against me, and my plan, I had a plan going against them as well, you know, but I didn't execute as well as they did. And I think that's what it comes down to. And, especially this league is, who's going to execute the best that day. And, you know, sometimes, hey, tip my hat, I got beat, you know, that's how it goes. Yeah, that's just another challenge of this, and, you know, something people might not think about.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And I hear non-athletes talk about how athletes should go about doing it. And I just scoff, because I'm like, it's just not that easy, man.
It looks easy on the TV. Trust me. I know. I get it.
Oh yeah. My biggest line is, you know, all the experts are sitting at home on the couches watching.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the business, or the nature of the business, you know?
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, you talked about your team basically, and I was thinking that a lot of what I have seen this year, I mean, it seems like the DNA of the team has changed a little bit, especially compared to last year overall. But this year, throughout the season, it seemed like you guys had spells where you were scoring a lot of runs, and then it seemed like you had spells where the pitching staff was doing a great job. And then, how do you look at this team? What kind of team are you? Are you the kind that, you know, can put that offensive run together and win, or are you just mostly a defensive team, or what are the Lions right now?
Well, lately I feel like we've been hitting the ball a little bit better. You know, we scored a lot of runs last night in my game. That was great.
It was.
Yeah, that was great. But I mean, you know, I think it's kind of been like back and forth, like you said. You know, one day, you know, we'll go on a streak and pitch really well, and then, you know, we'll hit really well. You know, but our defense is always really good. I feel like we're really, really sharp defensively, and, you know, our bats are strong as well. But I feel like we just do everything well, honestly. You know, there's not a huge hole, you know, top to bottom. So, yeah, I mean, we're just a pretty solid team.
Okay. All right. Solid team. Who's the ace of this staff now?
Oh, I don't know.
All right. Next question. If you're in the building and you don't know, I'm not going to guess.
I mean, everybody wants to put a label on ace or opener, you know, opening day starter. There's always got to be a label on it.
But sure, because if you guys were to make the playoffs, we want to know who's pitching game one. That's why.
if you're going to ask me that, I think I did it last year. I've done it, you know, but I don't make those decisions. But, you know, if you go off this year, I mean, especially the last month, Kona Takahashi is the ace. There's no doubt about it. You know what I mean? And okay. I'm not gonna sit here and tell you that he's that I've pitched better than him the last month and a half.
Okay.
Because I don't think anyone has. So for going into the playoffs right now, for sure. Like, and it takes like I like that for him. You know, me and him are really good friends, and we cheer each other, and we, you know, we battle it out. You know, we got like quality start battle going, and you know, dating back to last year, who's got the most wins. You know, so me and him kind of feed off each other, you know. And I'm never the guy that, you know, I'm a humble dude, man. So if I'm not the opening day starter, if I'm not the, you know, first starter of the playoffs, you know what, man? Just tell me when to pitch and I'll be ready. That's the kind of pitcher I am.
I'm with you.
I'm not the kind of guy that's like, oh, I gotta be the face of the staff. I don't have an ego like that, you know. I just pitch, and you know, you tell me when, and you tell me how long, and that's how I work. That's how I operate. I don't work on labels. I don't work on, you know, entitlement. I've been a lot of places in my career, and you know, it don't get you anywhere acting like that. So for me, you know, whatever the team decides or whoever we want to pitch, hey, let's do it. You tell me when to throw, and I'll be ready. That's the kind of player I am.
All right, excellent. Love to hear that. All right, last question. Now, SoftBank has obviously wrestled the PL crown away from you guys for the first time in a couple of years. So other than your buddy Akashi hitting unexpected home runs, what makes that team so tough?
Oh, man. There's a list of things, but...
The short list, yes.
the short list, their starting pitching's really good. Really good. Their bullpen's solid. I think, you know, Moinello and Morey are, you know, back into the bullpen's really good.
Yep.
And a little different dynamic than last year, I feel, is the speed on the bases.
Hmm.
I didn't feel that last year as much as I do this year. So they've got top and the bottom of the order. They got guys that are going to hit. They're going to hit the little single, and then they're going to steal second and third before you blink your eyes.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So there's a different dynamic to the team, but also maintaining the threat of the power in the middle. So it's a similar lineup, but also different.
Different dynamic, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, there's a different dynamic flowing in there that you know, that I didn't face last year. You know, going into the Climax Series last year, they were more of a power, that, you know, just try to keep them in the ballpark kind of team.
Sure.
You know, I think maybe five or six guys had 25 homers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, you couldn't take a pitch off, but now you can't take a pitch off because now you know, you walk a guy or you give up a single and you're worried about him stealing second. And then the guy you're facing can also take you deep. So there's a speed dynamic and a power dynamic. That's a little bit different this year. And they're, you know, all the hitters are solid top to bottom as well. And their depth is really good.
Yeah, Jim and I always talk about how deep they are as an organization, not just as a, you know, the first level of their top team, but the second guys on the farm team. And
yeah,
you don't get to see the third guys, the guys on the third team, because they haven't been able to work their way high enough. So yeah,
if you're a player there, you got a long road to go to, you know. You got some competition in front of you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a long road, I know you guys are not in the playoffs yet exactly. So good luck with that this weekend. And
thank
hopefully
you.
You'll get there and we'll be able to talk to you again in another week or so after you are playing in the Climax Series.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know, we'll see what happens. I didn't think it was going to come down to the last weekend, but I think it's going to. So that's just baseball being crazy right there, you know.
Hey, all kinds of excitement, and we love it.
Yeah.
All right, well, good luck to you, and we'll talk to you again. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, no worries. Appreciate it.
All right, so he thinks his body is playing winter ball. I really love that line. What was the thing that was rolling around in the Allen brain after you listened to this?
Well, A few things, and I'll try my best to be too concise. That, you know, Zach,
take your time, man. It's early in the morning. You know,
Zach has been a real find for us, and you kind of got that impression the first time I talked to him, and he was, you know, when he said, when one of the first questions we ask people is, you know, what was the process that got you here, and he's been like, I've been dying to get here and like waiting for that call for a long time, you know, and he's just not your typical, he defies explanation in many ways, in that he's a real, real deep character. And it's just such a joy. First of all, he's got a great way with language. There's kind of poetry to the way he talks, in the sense that you get a feel for the fabric of how a player approaches the game. That's very, you know, tactile. And I, in March, when we had our little roundtable discussion, is it still a roundtable if you're talking over the internet, I wonder?
It's probably a wired table. Okay, a bandwidth table.
It could be digital table, kind of a smorgasbord kind of thing.
And, yeah, but panel discussion.
But he had an expression about he's used before, which was the process of becoming a pitcher was a process of finding out, you know, who he was as a pitcher.
Correct.
Which is something you sometimes hear sculptors say. You know, so you hear a sculptor say, "There's a, you know, I see the thing within the object, and it's my job to get it out."
Right.
So he's got that, and then he's also got the little there's a trick pitch in there, and the trick pitch is the one where he's boasting about being humble.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I see where you're going.
I think that's really great, because I see. Maybe I think too much, and I like literature, but it's a kind of a literary, it has kind of a literary quality to it, because he's telling you, he's coming out in front, you know, and basically I can see where it's something like he might use the Dennis Sarfati, you know, stay back kind of a mantra.
Right.
Where being humble is just, you know, remind yourself to be humble, because nothing's ever as easy as it looks.
Even if you have a good day. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, everything's, it's a process of a lot of things. And when you do well, it's not always you. And when you do badly, it's not always you. And it's not always about you. So maybe that's his sort of his message to himself. But when he says it, it's so wonderful. It's like, it comes out, and I don't mean this personally, Zach. I mean this as a compliment. It's just it's rich when you say, you know, somebody could take it as saying it's so great to be in me because I'm so humble. but when I hear you say it, I know exactly what you're saying, and I love that little contrast. So there's that. Okay, so that's enough about my just salivating over the quality of the interview. I think the thing that really struck me was, you know, going back to square one approach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody does this, but it's always not everybody does it, but every player comes to Japan who is the first time or second time or 10th time they struggle. At one point they say, look, I got to figure this out because what I'm doing ain't working.
Right.
And it's really a rabbit hole. I mean, it's easily, you see some guys go into there and they never come out because they start moving, they start changing things, and they sort of forget where they started.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun, but he sort of like gives you the impression that, okay, it's about time, I've got to do it. It's now or never, because I'm not me. And so that was interesting. It's almost like performing surgery on your game.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to come out. You don't know what you're going to be on the other side. So it's
exploratory surgery. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You don't know.
You know, if there's a problem, you can locate it, but you have to go in and find
out. Well, the thing is, and once you start making cuts, you don't know if you'll be able to go back to, you know, you'll go back, do a redo. There's a redo button on there sometimes. And sometimes people can and sometimes people can't. And the other one I would say is the talk about adjustments and to talk about the Rock 10 Eagles, which I found really, really interesting because, as noted before, at least I observed before, I don't know if I'm correct, but the Eagles, one of the things when the Eagles at the beginning of the season were playing really, really well is that their hitters were making really good adjustments, I thought. And I think if you gave them enough looks, they could really be a nightmare because this is a big scoring team. I mean, this is the in each league we have two teams that are big scoring teams, and the Eagles are one of the Pacific League's teams. And I think it's a lot to do with their ability to sort of find team solutions to problems. So the fact that he had to pitch so many times against the Eagles, I think there's a reason there. So that is it.
I see. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You're saying that maybe the Lions actually also wanted him to face the Eagles. Because
I wonder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, one doesn't know, but.
And the schedule at the beginning, plus you had the six game.
Yeah. Well, in the six game, you were going to face everybody, but.
Definitely.
But
yeah.
I mean, we did have a case where. I know one of my blog followers, subscribers said, it's Tuesday. Where are Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Kodai Senga pitching against each other?
Right.
Because right. That happened a couple of times. So I think it was just a random thing. I don't think, Hatsuhiko Tsuji, the man. Well, he did have to script, you know, he had to make a lot of random adjustments or adjustments on the fly when he ran out of pitchers a couple of times. So there may be a little of that, but I don't know if it was really well planned out in the way that like the Nippon Ham Fighters do, where Hideki Kuriyama thinks he can game players' abilities to pitch against other teams.
Right.
in really peculiar raw, starting pitcher selections, but I don't think it's quite like that, but it might be.
Yeah, well, going back to what you said about him, maybe not boasting about being humble. I love that he's not married to these labels, although I do like the labels in that. I think. As a player, I enjoyed knowing what I was supposed to do for a particular team, and whether I was told it or whether I just read the situation and understood it, it gave me a place and it gave me a function. It gave me a goal, and I'm very goal oriented anyway. So that helped me make the adjustments to whatever team I was playing with. But I love him saying, just give me the ball and let's go play. You know, I'll pitch. You tell me how long, you tell me when and where, and I'm there. So I know that's good. And, you know, I think by now, most of the listeners know I'm prissy when it comes to running. But for basketball, man, I would always go out, unless it was raining on a, you know, when you're playing an outdoor court, I was ready to go at any time. And all I needed was my shoes and a couple of wristbands and let's go. So I love that aspect of him saying, you know, you just tell me when and where and I'm ready to go. That was really fun. But I do have one issue with what he talked about with the Cebu defense. And I might disagree with the overall defense being really good. I think Sosuke Genda is probably one of the best shortstops in the world at the moment. So
I would agree.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And Shuta Tonosaki, I think he's elite at second and very good at other positions.
Yeah, and I think when Ernesto Mejia is out there, I think he's a good, really good defensive first baseman.
Yeah, there are some good defensive players. And even Yuji Kaneko, he can play some spots. I don't think he's great at elite at any particular spot, but he's really useful and really good. Mm. But other than that, I'm not sure that they have a lot of really good defensive player. I mean, even Takaya Nakamura, if he weren't beaten up physically, because he's got such quick hands, you see what he does. He just gobbles
yes,
up.
Yes, he has. Yes, base. And does anybody remember Chris Farley?
The Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I don't want to say that. Okay, he was fat. Okay, he was a heavy. He was a big guy. I mean, I don't mean that pejoratively. He was a large guy, but he was very nimble, and had the kind of lower body agility like a ballet dancer kind of thing. Although it's an odd mix, but that's Nakamura's like that. He's a very large guy with a big frame. But he has, he also has kind of small feet, and I think he has really good, a really good lower body control and balance, and good soft hands. So if the ball's not hit, you know, he's not going to be the guy who's going to go 10 feet and get a ball into the gap, or you know, down the line or behind the line. But if the ball's hit near him,
he's
generally going to get it. He's pretty much a vacuum cleaner over there.
Yeah, he's good. And, you know, Corey Spangenberg has played all over the field, it seems, and it just really has been difficult for me to gauge where his best position might be. And I've seen him have incidents out there where he didn't catch a ball in maybe left field or right field, and he didn't throw a ball well across the diamond on the infield. But I think he's a good defensive player. I just don't know where his best position is. But I'm just not – I think that has been one of the issues. You want to look at the Lions and their pitching and blame it on the pitching not being great. But I think there have been some defensive issues, some balls that – and it's not – for me, it's not those balls that are routine or the ones that are rocketed out there that no one's going to catch. It's those 50-50 plays that some guys can make and some guys end up not making. And it just seems to me that there are a lot of those 50-50 balls that end up falling in and extending innings or giving a hit to a guy. And now you've got a different situation, a different game situation, different pressure, or home run batters up at the plate, and he's got a swing with two outs. Just changing the game situation kind of a thing that has happened with the Lions. It's not that their defense is terrible, but I don't know. Maybe next time Zach comes on, we can talk about it. But I'm never going to expect him to come on and say, well, I don't think this teammate is that great a defensive player. We're not going to hear that.
He might say this guy's a great defensive player, but he isn't going to rat out his teammate who's been costing him games.
Right. So, I mean, we can talk about it, but I think, that has been it for me. I think it's part of the reasons why we haven't seen the Lions maybe run away with some games and some closer games. But, you know, they're right on the cusp and they're not out of the playoffs. And like I was trying to explain to him, I'm like, I tried so hard not to count this team out, and it just, you know, you look at the standings and you look at the numbers, just like their game on Saturday, they fell behind, was it 6-1 or 6-2?
6-1.
And I'm thinking, okay, this team, you know, it's not the team that it has been the past two seasons where, like I was telling Zach, I said, look, you guys are walking a home run away from, you know, being in and out of any game. And so I thought, okay, if they're down 6-1, like I said, a single, a walk, a hit by pitch, and a home run, and you know the lead is just 3 runs, and that's a save situation. So they're still in this game, and sure enough, they came back, and they had a chance to really do some damage. And in fact, Ito hits a ball to the wall and left, and it could have been a grand slam, and it ends up just being a sacrifice fly. And so that's how close they were, you know, about a few feet from winning that game, probably. But they end up with a tie. So that's what makes the half game. But, you know, look, Zach is a really fun guy. He always tells me, in fact, the last interview we had with him, he says, no, I got time. We can keep talking. And I'm like, yeah, we could keep talking, but that would be a whole podcast. Let's just get you on again.
Yeah, I think, he needs his own show almost, because it would be. And I mean,
don't say that. We don't need the competition.
Well, I mean that in the best way, because I think my image for, you know, what's best for Zach Neale is that he go in as many directions as he can, because he's got a lot to give.
Definitely, definitely. So let's talk about what the Lions are giving to the rest of the Pacific League. So like I said, they're a half game out of the number two spot here. And this showdown that I apologize again that we're going to miss on Sunday, we'll have to discuss next week when everything is all settled. Today, the Lions are playing at Zozo Marine Stadium. And Wataru Matsumoto is going for the Lions and Kazuya Ojima is going for Lotte. And geez, that's going to be a really good game. That's probably, you could probably say it's for the second spot, but I think.
Well, it is if the Marines win.
Yeah. Seibu plays at SoftBank on Monday, and Lotte is hosting Nippon Ham on Monday. So I think advantage Marines right now, but yeah, it would be over if the Marines.
If the Marines win, it's over. If it's a tie or the Lions win, then it goes to Monday.
Okay. And yeah, we explain all this to say that by Monday you'll know all this stuff.
Yeah, probably. So all this stuff, just ignore us.
Just ignore Jim.
don't ignore John because A, it's impossible. And there's no B.
Not impossible. You do it all the time. What are you talking about?
Hashtag hi.
Well, I have superpowers.
Well, how do you know some of the listeners don't? All right, let's not get it. So the Lions, I want to point to the pitching and say that the pitching is the problem. But the pitching, remember, somebody a few years back said no team is going to win the league with a 4+ team ERA. And there they are with another.
That's not exactly what someone said. But yeah, that was the gist.
Yeah, never. Right? No, it's not a path to
a formula for success.
Formula for success. Something
how
like
I that. Remember that.
I'm trying to forget because sometimes you actually listen when I make you angry, right?
That's a good profile of me. If somebody makes me angry, that's pretty much the only thing I remember.
Right, right. So it's easy to say, like, it's very noticeable that they have not had a very consistent rotation this year, and yet their pitching numbers and the metrics are very similar to what they've done over the past years, especially the past two when they've been winning the Pacific League title. So obviously we got to point somewhere else, and certainly they haven't generated as many runs, and they don't seem to have the power. And Hotaka Yamakawa, I didn't even talk to Zach about, and we talked for about an hour in total. We talked before the interview and after, but
yeah, they had the last two, you know, the 2018 and 2019 Pacific League MVPs basically have dud seasons.
Right. They just haven't had that offensive.
Two of the best hitters in the league for 2 years suddenly are league average. You know, they look like they're replacement level players.
Mm. And yeah, that definitely put the damper on.
Yeah, that kind of hurts. They lost their leadoff. They lost a guy who's a, you know, 400 on base percentage leadoff guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So those three things were kind of a tough one. I mean, they did get Corey Vandenberg, who's been a wonderful a revelation. So yeah, it wasn't going to be the same offense, and they got some nice bumps in there. But the loss of Shogo Akiyama and the disappointing seasons from Tomi Omori and Hotaka Yamakawa really, really torpedoed that offense.
Yamakawa being hurt again and hitting 205. And look, the past month, and it's not a terrible thing, but they've had to put Takumi Kuriyama in the cleanup spot. And, you know,
of course, then it's one of those. Yeah. And then he's been the second coming of Keizo Kawashima. They put him in the cleanup spot and he looked like a cleanup hitter.
Yeah, he's going to put good at bats together and he's going to be productive. But You probably want to see him in a different spot in the order, maybe, depending on who's out there.
Depends on your team, exactly. I mean, for years, you know, in 2005, when the Lotte Marines won the Pacific League and the Japan Series, their cleanup hitter was Saburo Homura. So,
right. Yeah, so it's just representative of how the team has struggled and the injuries and everything. But still, right there with a shot to get into the playoffs. So.
Yeah, I think just to have to get in a word or two about the Lions, I think the defense is really not really any different from what it's been. I don't really think it's any better or worse. I think it has been much better than the pitching overall. I think the pitching has been the real inconsistent factor, I don't know if anything has to do with Tomo Yomori. He's been also wildly inconsistent as a catcher. In 2018, when I was hypercritical of his defense, he did, however, block pitches very well and throw out runners very well. Mm-hmm. And last year, he kind of like did nothing well. But he was an offensive MVP. He did nothing. He didn't block pitches or throw out runners particularly well. But I think he picked up the rest of his game. And this year, I can't say I really have a read on it. But his metrics are not good according to Delta graphs. I think the defense is actually better than that. I don't think it's bad. I think it's better than average. I think the pitching has these huge holes this year.
And we've seen a lot of Masatoshi Okada catching as well. So it's just not a lot of, but you know, more than we're used
well,
to.
More than,
it's definitely more than
more
last
than
year.
You did when Mori was MVP last year. Yeah.
Right. And that changes things as well. So they're just different and that happens. And you would expect that. It has been a struggle like it has for most of the other teams. I did, you know, like the breakdown of what Zach was talking about with the SoftBank Hawks, in that they put pressure on you because they can hit home runs and steal bases. And I think that's similar to what some of the guys on the Lions have been doing as well. You know, you get obviously not Sosuke Genda, but he's going to steal bases for you for sure. But a guy like Tonosaki is just a terrific player.
Yeah,
he can hit home run on you, and he can steal a base on you. And,
Fumikazu Kimura is another of those guys, and Yuji Kaneko is another
Kaneko,
one.
Kaneko, maybe not with the home run so much, but he'll gap you once in a while. And they've got some of that aspect.
Yeah,
that
they're just dynamic. Missing. They're missing the big engines. I mean, they got the small parts down.
They certainly do. So it should be fun, and I will try to watch that game if my significant other doesn't yell at me because I'm watching a game while we're on the train, but who knows? But that's a good thing about having Rakuten TV. I can watch it later.
She doesn't yell. She does.
Yeah. She didn't used to yell. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay. I agree. Okay.
All right. Let's make a four-seam transition.
The kids are getting older, so I think yelling becomes a necessary component at some point, perhaps.
I don't know about age. I know about kids. So,
all right.
Let's make a four-seam transition. And again, thank you very much, Zach. And we hope to talk to you again. And I do want to have a panel discussion, another one. It'll probably be January of next year if we're going to get players involved. So. That'll be a quick turnaround, just like in the NBA. But anyway, let's talk about the Central League very quickly. There is no playoff for the Central League, so it was just a race for second place, and it looks like that's all settled with the Tigers wrapping that up. But I did want to commend the Dragons for their top three finish. They settled that with a 2-0 shutout of DeNA on Thursday, and that ended an eight-year drought from the upper echelon of the Central League. And it was, of course, Yudai Ohno working 7 scoreless innings to add to his Sawamura award-worthy resume. And the band-aided bullpen came on and held it down and capped off a streak of 11 consecutive wins over the Bay Stars at Nagoya Dome. So that's kind of impressive. So when you do things well, you know, you start to have some little milestones. So that's a good milestone for them. And look, at the beginning of the season, I was fearful. You can ask, and we'll have Alonzo Powell on soon, I think, to discuss it. But he's the hitting coach with the Dragons. And I was really literally worried about his mental health, the way that they were losing every day and different ways. Right. But mostly a lot
of it. I'd be worried about Alonzo's mental health if they said, here's Akira, and, you know, turn him in, you know, make sure he's a great hitter. Polish, sand off some of those rough edges.
There you go. Well, you know, he might be a great, just like you were talking about the sculptor who sees the object and sees what's inside it. Maybe that's what Alonzo might be able to find in Nao, so that you're not seeing.
I see it. And this is the digression aside, because I watched him play the other day, which is rare because he's played so little.
Correct.
And he put a good swing on a, there was a mistake and he put a good swing on it and he didn't get a hit, but it was a good swing. And so I think, okay, well, he's capable of that. But when you look at his inability to adjust to minor league pitching, I can't say he's not adjusted to minor league pitching. He could be hitting balls to, you know, 500 at bats. He could have just repeatedly, you know, hit balls the wrong way.
Sure. We don't know. Yeah,
I can say is that there's no evidence from his offensive statistics that he has made adjustments.
Okay. All right. Cool.
So move on.
Yeah, where was I? So I was worried about Alonzo's mental health because they had a stretch early on where they were just losing every day, and I was emailing, and we were, you know, like I said, we've talked about other stuff. So I said, hey, how are you doing today? How are your workouts going? Are you getting your walks in? Are you getting your workouts in? Did you get to the gym today? Just other stuff. And I never bothered him about baseball and the Dragon. Even when they would win games, I didn't say, hey, that was, you know, it was a good this or that and the other. I was just worried about what losing does to you. And then they went on a stretch where here in the second half where they really made a big push to come up. Thanks to Ono. Thanks to Yohei Oshima, who had a bunch of hits and I think is going to lead the league in hits probably. So, big ups to them. It was a good run for them, and hopefully without some of their pitchers. And, you know, I think when we talked about their expected rotation in the preview show, I Ono was in it, but I think he was about the only guy they were throwing out on a weekly basis who we mentioned. I think most of the guys who were pitching, we didn't talk about in the preview show. So they've done a good job in that respect. And hopefully they can keep it going for next year.
I'm pleased that I'm happy as punch that they're going to get the wins, because the team has really had, the team struggled. I mean, it was their first time in the top three in the Central League in 8 years, and for good reasons. And of course, reason A was that the newspaper industry, the bottom fell out of the newspaper industry, and they're owned by a newspaper about 2008. And so the spending dried up. And then in 2011, they fired the best manager in franchise history because he wasn't fan-friendly enough.
Right.
So those two things conspired. And the following year, they still had the talent base and they finished second. But then that was it. So they've struggled for various different number of reasons. And I will say they have a lot of nice components, and I would also, you know, I might be generous and say that their runs scored, runs allowed imbalance, that you know, having as good a win-loss record while surrendering so many more runs than they've allowed is a poor look. It's a poor look, and I mean, it's not dissing them. I'm just saying it causes one to wonder, you know, where are the real Chunichi Dragons. But you can see they have some good components. They have some good, starting pitchers. They have some excellent relievers. They have some good hitters, and they had. But it's also a mishmash, and I have to think that one of the components for having the really good record they had this year was just having a some good players who did well, and a lot of good luck. So
if you just strictly look at their 426 runs scored and the 487 allowed.
I'm not looking strictly at that, but that aspect of it is sort of like somebody winning a presidential election on electoral votes and losing by 5 million votes. You know, it's not a sustainable balance.
Well, if you had let me finish my point, it was going to be that, 60, they've been outscored by about 60 runs, 60 plus runs, but more than 20 of those came in two games against the Carp.
Okay.
So that leaves 40. Now there's still,
The
40 is bad, but it's not as bad as it looks if you take out those two outliers.
Well,
games.
that tends to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. But. Yeah,
but how many times does Bank Hops give up 20 runs in a game? And good teams get blown out, but just a lot less often.
Right. All right, let's move along and make a two-seam transition and talk about the top rookies. Now, we did talk about MVPs last week. Apparently, Jim forgot, but we did mention that. But we haven't talked about the rookies in a long time.
You didn't insult me. That's why I didn't. Why I forgot.
I see. All right, is your nose going to be okay? You going to make it through? All right, so like I said, we haven't talked about the top rookies in a while, so let's bring them out. I think in the Central League, let's start there. It's just cut and dry. I think there's not much of a race. Carp right-hander Masato Morishita, who's second in ERA to Yudai Ohno at 1.91, and Ohno is 1.82. He's third in the Central League in strikeouts,
yep.
Fourth in whip and quality starts. He's very star-worthy. In terms of this debut season,
I think
he's hands down the guy. So
he's really something. I really loved what they did. He was one of these guys who, when you see him, I scouted him a little bit from his video in college, and I was noticing one of the things about him was his arm slot,
mm-hmm.
and they changed his arm slot, and. One of the games I watched in the spring, they made him go from three quarters to almost straight over the top.
Okay.
Okay. And he was struggling with that in this game in the spring. And then he went back to he just went back to the way he was in college, and it was really effective. And then when I saw the season, when he finally got the start of the season, he was back to being the one they wanted. I think closer to the over the top. Now, of course, I say that. I don't know. I don't have any inside information. I'm just saying what I saw when he was in college.
Sure.
It may have been his decision. You know, may have been the college video might have been an aberration, or the, you know, when he was playing for the Japan national team, it might have been an aberration. I don't know. But okay. Over the top, he's just got tremendous leverage and spin on that ball. It's just a wonderful, a wonderful thing to see.
Well, I was going to point out that Daichi Osada had started the season looking like he was going to be the ace of the staff, and he ends up only pitching in 11 games, and he's injured and whatever else happened over there. But
insufficient fitness.
Yeah, whatever else. That's another vague way of saying something that we don't know what they're trying to say. But anyway, so Morishita ends up leading the team with 10 wins. He's 10-3. And the guy with the next most wins is Alan Curry. And he only has 8 and really struggled to get there with an ERA of more than a point above that. And then you've got Yusuke Nomura and Osada. So, I mean, there really wasn't really much of a consistency in the rotation, and except for the rookie. And that, you know, he ends up pitching as the ace for most of the second half of the season, in my opinion. I'm sure Kuri got a lot of starts in which he was matched up against more veteran guys. But I think at some point the Carp knew they weren't going to win the Central League title, and they just focused on just getting through the season. And that was kind of a slog in this coronavirus impacted year. But
throw a bone out to my namesake, Alan Curry. It's harsh because he's always had this. He's got a big body, and he's always had a little difficulty with the balance and his approach.
Mm-hmm.
he's one of these guys who's sort of like, you suspect there's a too many cooks problem with him.
Okay.
Because, but I'll tell my Alan Curry story really briefly. I was watching Pro Yaku News one time in a game he pitched, and the whoever was the pitcher commentator on him was just ripping into him for throwing his breaking ball so much. It's like, man, you're just throwing breaking balls like you forgot how to throw a fastball. And his fastball is really good. But he falls in love with, you know, as in Japan, if a pitcher is, you know, he throws his fastball, you know, 50% of the time in a game because it's really working and everything's working off the fastball, the pitching coach will rip into him for not throwing the breaking ball.
Right.
Because that's what they do. And he'd had success with the breaking ball, and he came back the next game and he thought it's going to work again, and it didn't. And he got hammered every time he was hanging his breaking stuff in the, after being really dominant with the fastball, he was setting it up, except he was setting up cookies in the middle of the plate. So anyway, the next week comes back, and that was in the middle of September. And really since the middle of September, the beginning of September, he's been a ninja. with the fastball, and it's just really basic stuff. I mean, he goes out there and he establishes the fastball, and he's just been dynamite. So I couldn't be happier for him, because he's just a wonderful, big friendly kind of puppy of a guy.
All right. Well, probably what's that guy's name? Takeru Emoto.
Yep. In fact, he was the one who was criticizing him. Yep.
Yeah. Is that his name?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. He's the guy who bashes on pitchers more than anybody, so that's the guy I remember.
Yeah, well, he was the one who did it. As soon as you said it, I remember it was him.
Okay, yeah, Emoto, all right. Yeah, so let's go to the Pacific League, where the race is probably much more, it's closer, and Pro Yaku News actually focused on two guys, and I think they're right. One is right-handed relief pitcher Kaima Taida of the Lions, whom we both like, and we talked about him earlier this season. And then the second is shortstop Hiroto Kobukata of Rakuten. So it's going to be a tight race between these two guys, but I think Kobukata just runs away with it.
You always go with an everyday player because they're so rare in Japan.
And I think he doesn't have standout numbers, but he has very consistent numbers for a first year guy, and just was more useful and more an everyday player.
He's playing shortstop,
and he's playing a important position, and had to replace a guy who, not replace, but defensively replace a guy, Egoro Mogi, who just was a star on that team. So that's a very hard thing to uproot in a very important position. But he did it, and he was consistent, and I think he's going to come away with the award.
Yeah, the other guy in the beginning of the season who had appeared to have a real shot at it, but his season really stalled, was Hisanori Yasuda of the Lotte Marines. Here was a guy who, when Brandon Laird got hurt, they said, okay, you go play third base and bat cleanup the rest of the season. Well, didn't turn out to be the rest of the season, because his numbers went into a funk. But I really liked him, because he has the ability, he has a very live bat, and he puts really good swings in the ball, but he's been so inconsistent that it hasn't worked out overall for him. But so, you know, you'll see a game with him and it'll be like, bam, he hit that ball well. Bam, he hit that ball well.
I tell you this, there's two other guys on Lotte who,
sure,
if they had played a whole season and been out there a lot, they would have.
Absolutely.
One is Kyota Fujiwara, and I love his swing. I love his approach. And he has been one of the guys who, when they were hit with the COVID outbreak or the cluster.
For sure, he came up.
He came up. And that's probably the only reason he got a shot. But he has really been good for them. I don't know that they want to move him around in the lineup or anything. And he's one of the guys, I'm similar. Like, you know, practice, we're talking about practice, man. But so I can understand if he didn't do well on the farm, he just wasn't motivated. But you get me in the real thing, turn the lights on, I'm ready to go. and it just looked like he was ready to go. And the other guy is Koshiro Wada, the little jackrabbit they just send out there to steal bases. Now, I know he's not going to get probably any votes for Rookie of the Year. He's a third-year player, so he barely qualifies. In fact, I had to email Jim earlier in the week and ask him, does he qualify? Because I know he's a third-year guy.
But get 5 years. So.
Oh, it's five. Okay, well, he didn't have very many at-bats, but
uses a pinch runner. In fact, I think he was leading the league in steals. He was at one point when he stole his 20th base. He played in about he'd had about 10 plate appearances.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know, Tatsunori Hara came in. He stole Tadahito Iguchi's body for a few days, and he said, "Pinch runners, where's my pinch runner?" So there was him, but there was the other guy who was the left-handed hitting rookie catcher. It's
Toshiya.
Yeah, Toshiya Sato is very much like Hisanori Yasuda. He's got he's a sweet swinging left-handed catcher, but he's not going to get a lot of playing time with Tatsuhiro Tamura being the regular guy.
Right. So, yeah, they've had a lot of good players who just young players who just haven't had enough time to prove or just didn't get the opportunity. But it's like it's just like Coco Ballantyne said last week. Lotte is good. They're good. That's a good team. They have good players. So I look for them to be contenders again next year.
Yeah,
regardless of what happens this year. This year,
I think more of a future team though, because I look at did see a resurgence this year. You know, if guys like Ikuhiro Kyoto looking like 10 years younger, like they were the guys of promise, you know, when they were in their mid-20s,
right,
and early 20s, and we've had a few of those guys come back and have substantial seasons, which nobody expected. But the other thing is so much rich young talent, both in the bullpen and in the lineup, that you have to think Lotte is going to be a lot better team. And they're a little bit like the Chunichi Dragons because they've had that run imbalance for much of the season. So, I see that. I see that they have they look like they could have a future. Who knows?
Yeah. And probably next year. All right, let's make a one-team transition and talk about Hayato Sakamoto, the Sakamoto 2000 trek, which I thought was going to end last night, but
he Nippon Television, I think.
Yeah, he's at 19.99. He might get it on Sunday here as we later on today. So he's 31 years old. He turns 32 next month. And I remember his first hit because he beat the Dragons, I want to say in extra innings.
Right.
Don't quote me on that, but
when he was an 18-year-old right out of high school.
Right. He came in. Well, I'm not sure exactly. Yeah, I don't remember all the details about that. But yeah, it was in September. Mm-hmm. And I recall him beating the Dragons on that. So the next year, I think when he started getting more time at short, I went up to the PR guy and I said, "Hey, I want to do an interview with Sakamoto." And he said, "Okay, it's fine. This was the funniest thing I ever heard from a PR guy. Just don't ask him any hard questions." And I'm like, what is that? Like, how can a reporter mess him up? And I think longtime listeners will remember I talked to Alex Ramirez when he was part of that Giants team that was bashing a bunch of home runs. And I said, "Hey, I see Sakamoto as a number three hitter." And Alex said, no, when he's trying to hit home runs, he doesn't do very well. And I'm like, well, what does hitting in the three hole really have to do that much with hitting home runs per se? And so he and I got into a discussion.
Darn it. I could hear that conversation in my sleep.
So that was fun, but
it's entertaining me. It's going to keep me going for all day.
I'm so happy to hear that. So fast forward to this great career that Sakamoto has put together, and he's just amazing. And yeah, he had the one season where he hit 40 home runs. Wasn't that last year?
It was last year.
It was last year where he hit 40 home runs, but he has never been the home run hitter. And if he finished second, he should have. He probably could have won the home run title last year. But anyway, just a great career. And he's this shortstop for, you know, Japan's marquee team. He's basically a surefire Hall of Fame guy. But I heard Dave Okubo say something the other day that I thought was just brilliant. He said, well, the one thing that he said was brilliant.
I jest because actually he's pretty good with words. He's a guy who's a little more clever than he lets on.
Yes. And Okubo said, yeah, well, at the time, I think Sakamoto was three hits shy of 2000. And Okubo said, well, I don't see him as three hits shy of 2000. I see him 1,003 hits shy of 3,000 hits.
Well, I'll be honest, so do I.
Yeah. But I don't know. At 32, that's what I wanted to discuss about him because we figure he's going to get his 32. I'm sorry, his hit maybe today even and get into that Golden Players Club and probably be a Hall of Fame player. But I don't think 3,000 is in his future because he's a shortstop. And a lot of guys move – let me finish now. A lot of guys move from shortstop or middle infield to other positions, maybe third, maybe first. I don't really know that he's got the arm for a third base throw. I don't really see him playing first base either for the Giants. I don't think he's going to move to another team, and I don't think he's going to move to the other league. And we know he's been struggling with bad back and bad this and bad that, so he's not going to play shortstop for maybe more than another couple of years, you think? And that would put him at 35. I don't see him getting to 3,000 hits. Maybe 2,500, but maybe that's if he can keep up the great at-bats. What do you think?
Well, Bill James is a formula for predicting career are
of course he does.
Okay.
I mean, of course he does. A formula for predicting careers. Okay.
You can ring your bell. Okay, John, that was John's. You hear the buzzer. An angel got his wings when John interrupted me. The formula for correcting for calculating the percentage or the likelihood of reaching some career milestones is had him before the season at a 30% chance to get 3,000 hits. I think it's possible, but the one thing I think he could play third base easily. And the reason I think he could play third base easily is because you're not throwing across your body at third base.
Okay.
You do sometimes, but most of the throws are playing the ball in front of you instead of going in, you know, going to your right into the hole. And I think he could do that, but I think the very pithy remark you made was that playing for the Giants. Now, he's a guy who I definitely could see being a DH late in his career.
Okay.
So unless the Central League follows the National League in the States and goes to a DH, and I'll absolutely 100% agree he's not going to go play for another team because he's a face of the Giants, and he would probably go coach on the farm team before he played for somebody else.
Okay.
So that is a limiting factor, is that because there's no DH and he's not going to go play for somebody else, that could put a cap. However, should he have a couple of very healthy seasons, like two, and he gets a healthy jump on the 3,000. If he gets over 2,600 and he's still a viable shortstop, the Giants will not pass up the chance to keep, they will make every excuse in the world for why he needs to play every day while, you know, they'll fiddle while Rome burns in order to get the payoff from having him get 3,000 hits in terms of marketing and merchandise. Just like the Giants were, you know, the Giants on Saturday night also celebrated. They had a big celebration after the game in which they honored the legendary Yomiuri Giants pitcher, Hisashi Wakuma.
Legendary. Never threw a pitch for him, right?
He pitched two innings in the Eastern League in a Yomiuri Giants uniform in 2019.
Yeah, nobody saw that. That doesn't count.
And so all the guys were wearing Thanks Iwakuma shirts, and they're going like, I wanted to say on the front it said Thanks Iwakuma, and I know it was thanks for your great career and what you did for baseball and, you know, and that I see, but I wonder if on the back of the t-shirt it didn't say for what.
Yeah, for visiting. Thanks for visiting the Giants. All right, well, we've got to move along here head toward the end. But hopefully Sakamoto gets his hit today and wraps it up this season. And all right, one note, I just wanted to throw SoftBank Hawks ace Kodai Senga into the Sawamura Award consideration because he really has made a pitch. He leapfrogged Yoshinobu Yamamoto in the ERA lead this past week and has just really been, he's pitching a triple
round. I'm not certain he so much as leapfrogged him as he
leapfrogged him in the ERA race.
Well, he did in the sense that he then had, yeah, he did. They were very, very close, but the big thing that he was missing was less runs allowed and more innings pitched.
Okay.
Yeah, so he needed to get his innings pitched up there so he could appear on the league leaders table.
Right, and that's why I remember Jason was tweeting about, why is he going out for this inning? And I'm like, because he needs it on his resume.
He's set now because he's got 120 innings, so he's set for the season. So.
Right, yeah, he needed it on his resume, so mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think he's up there in the conversation now. So
sure. Yeah, he'll be in the conversation of why he's going to be. You can already hear the guys making excuses why he's not going to be considered. Because that's what happens when they know who's going to win.
When they've got their minds made up, say it, finish your sentence.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. We've got one question this week. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so the impatient coaster freak who reminded me on Twitter. See, what happens is when you put out a high heat, I put a like on it, which means I've got it, I have filed it away, and we will get to it. And I liked his question right away when he sent it out, but apparently we didn't get to it quickly enough, so he refiled it and said, did you guys forget me? And basically did you guys forget this? And no, we didn't. We just weren't able to get to it. So we're getting to it now, Costa Freak. He says, Yudai Ono of the Dragons and Tatsushi Masuda of the Lions are likely free agents after the season. What team do you think they'll be playing for in 2021? Hashtag high heat. Jim.
Well, Yudai Ono, look at a couple of things when you see guys are domestic free agents, and maybe although Yudai Ono got some ink on trade rumors, and John Morosi had mentioned him, you know, saying what a lot of scouts had said, you know, that he was a candidate to go to the majors, but he'll need to be posted. The John Morosi story said he would be an international free agent after the 2021 season. That's incorrect. There's that. I don't see him as going to the States. I see him as being very inconsistent, but I'll tell you, if I'm a domestic free agent and I'm his age and I just had my career year, I would
get any better.
I would be thinking, why not get set for life? Why not? And if the SoftBank Hawks were to say, well, we know you're from Kyoto, but you'd really like Fukuoka.
Yeah.
I could easily see him going to the SoftBank Hawks.
All right. So, yeah, for me, you know, he's 32, and I just don't think it's going to get any better, but I don't know. But I don't think he can do anything better than he has done this year. He might be able to repeat some of it. So, yeah, we saw some reports that, yeah, that Spencer Patton also was getting some looks from major league teams. So these two guys together, I'm not sure what they're going to look at in terms of where they want their careers to go. But I could see, yeah, like you say, Ohno, if somebody cracks open that wallet and empties it into his pockets, he'll be with them. I don't think that's the Dragons, although
no.
Loyalty has something to do with players in Japan. And I do think that that stadium suits his style of pitching. If you look at his results there and compare them to the road throughout his career.
I also wouldn't be surprised if it were the Omiyori Giants. That was what I was going to say.
If right. you crack open the wallets and put them in, put it into his pockets, I think the Giants are the team. You know, Rakuten also has some money. So I could see maybe one of those two teams, but unfortunately Costa Freak, our crystal ball is still out at the shop. So I'm not sure about that one. Now, in terms of Masuda, the Lions closer, whom I call the robot, in a normal year, I would say a lot of teams would be interested in him, like Hanshin and Yomiuri, of course, not Yakult because they don't really spend a lot of money. Even DeNA, the Bay Stars would be in the running, but the last time the Giants got a Seibu closer who was the saves franchise leader in saves was it was Kiyoshi Ryota, that didn't really particularly work out great because that guy was kind of at the end of his career as well. So
John, when has that ever stopped the Giants? I mean, basically, hey, the guy's on his last legs, but everybody's famous.
Yeah, well, it has to start stopping sometime. I think this might be it.
No,
you don't think so.
They're still looking to vacuum up every Genjiro Sumitani type caliber player they can in Japan.
Well, I agree. So they're on the list as a possibility, but I'm not sure that they'll do that. So, you look at the teams that really need bullpen help. Probably the Bay Stars, the Tigers, maybe a setup guy, but I just don't think there's a lot of guys. As bad as some of the bullpens were out there, I don't think that the teams that have money need a bullpen guy at the back.
A team that would be a good fit for him is the Hiroshima Carp.
Yeah, I do have the Carp there, so
do have money now.
So. I have the Giants, I have the Carp, and like I said, if he doesn't mind being the Tigers.
Are very happy with Ruby De La Rosa, and they're not really looking to purchase a closer.
Yeah, next time I believe something the Giants say.
It was the Giants telling somebody else they were.
Next time I believe it.
But that's also the player I'm talking about is also somebody who's going to be in that range, that price range that Masuda would bring. And, of course, the other one is the obvious one for every Seibu Lions free agent is to go to Rockton Eagles, where he would join two guys, the Takayuki Kishi and Hideto Asamura, as well as all the other former teammates and friends of general manager Kazuhisa Ishii.
Yeah. So that's all we can give you here. You know, most of the teams with that have bank accounts and have a need, and those are the guys, those are the teams. So like I said, crystal ball out at the shop. So by the time we talk to you next week, everything will be decided. We'll be getting ready for the Climax Series, the PLCS, and that should be a really fun matchup between the two teams that play.
By the time we talk to you next time.
It could be over as well. So it should be a fun week. We, again, applaud all the teams getting through this pandemic plague.
Yes. And I want to add on that note, Tatsunori Hara, who occasionally says something very pithy, he'll often say things that are completely and totally meaningless, but that's, you know, if you play baseball, you've got to do that. Otherwise, they'll take away your union card.
Right.
But he did say something when the Giants won the pennant, which is, I've never been more proud to be a, you know, to be a part of the baseball community than realizing what we achieved this year during the pandemic of coming out and playing the game and staying in good physical condition so that we could allow fans back in the park.
Yep. It has been a marvel. So congratulations to NPB and all the players, staff, and coaches. Like I said before, good job. We will talk to you next week. Now, you can hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send us an email question to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. Comments, questions, all accepted. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
And see you at jballallen.com.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.